does is reaches into your brain chemically and locates your happiest memory chemically, and then locks onto that emotion and freezes it chemically, and then it keeps you happy, happy.
Hello, 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 and thank you for tuning in to The Selling Out Show, where we screw up life at our leisure for your listening pleasure. I am one of your hosts, David, the Diamond Dazzler, Ding-a-ling Schultz, and over here by my side is my partner in crime, my good friend indeed, Nathan Gorzinski. Nate, I normally reserve this part of the program to ask how you are doing, but before I inquire about your well-being, I have a pressing question to ask you, my friend.
Ooh, do tell.
Okay.
Or do ask.
Do ask. And, you know, here's the thing. I want you to think about the answer you're about to give. Okay. And should it take 15 minutes, an hour? I don't care. Okay?
Okay.
I know it's not really good for the audience to have that much dead air.
Mm.
But, I mean, the fate of our friendship hangs in the balance on how you respond to this.
Oh, man, I'm glad I'm being recorded for this.
Yeah, there's two camps of people in the world, and you're going to fall into one of them.
Okay.
Okay? So, let's say, hypothetical situation here. You can only listen to one of these artists for the rest of time. Who would you choose? Would it be Billy Ocean or Michael McDonald?
Oh, Michael McDonald all day.
Whoa, hey-o.
Yeah.
I told you to take some time. You freaking, you were rushing the stage.
I didn't need it. I mean, I'm okay with Billy Ocean, a little dancing on the ceiling.
Yeah.
Or, you know.
No,
oh, wait,
that was,
no, that's
Richie.
Lionel Richie, wow.
Look at you.
I get my Afro to 80s artists mixed sometimes.
Oh, my God.
It's not a racist thing. It's a haircut thing.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
No. Get out of my dreams. Get into my car. That's Billy Ocean, right?
Suddenly, life has new meaning to me.
Okay.
Does that do anything for you?
I mean, it's all right. But I
Wake
think...
Wake up suddenly, you're in love.
Yeah.
Nothing?
It's nice. I'm not gonna deny it. But
okay. But
I will say Michael McDonald started his career in the Doobie Brothers.
Mm,
so if you know, he's got a wider panorama of musical styles. He got a little easy listening and or R&B prog something later on, like What a Fool Believes, all that stuff.
Yamo be there.
Exactly. Yeah, he gets a lot of shit from some people, but like there was that whole scene in 40-Year-Old Virgin, I believe it was, where
yes,
he says, if I hear Yamo be there one more time, I'm a Yamo blow my brains out or whatever
he said. That's good. You can't remember Billy Ocean's tracks, but you definitely can quote a movie.
Yeah,
this much is true. What about like Caribbean Queen? There's nothing.
Yeah, no, that's a great song too.
Just nothing that is. No matter what, it's Michael McDonald.
The question
or bust.
Was,
yeah,
for the rest of my life,
yeah,
if I had to listen to one of them, and yep. I guess I could have answered it the other way because I could have spent the rest of my life discovering all the music I don't know from Billy Ocean.
Clever girl.
But I just know that. I already have a little head start in Michael McDonald. And I can do that.
Yeah. One of my biggest regrets in life was I had tickets to go see Michael McDonald and I didn't go because being obligated to do anything is just too much for me to handle. Even if it is to see, you know, Michael McDonald, the man himself, perform live on stage at a casino.
Mm. When was this? Like, how old were you at the time?
Oh, geez. Well, no, I was into his music. I wasn't like a teenager. I was probably late 20s, early 30s, or just turning 30. So like 14, 15 years ago.
You said I was already into his music. So obviously I wasn't a teenager. Are you saying something about the age demographic?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
His fans.
Well, I mean, you know, you gotta keep your cred, yo.
Sure.
Gotta keep it legit. Imagine if you're fucking grooving to your nin. Your Nine Inch Nails. I'm like, whoa, slow down, man. It's time for some sweet freedom up in this motherfucking party. I probably wouldn't be frowned upon by many of our friends at that age, you know. And I didn't have any Michael McDonald discs in my, in my collection at that time. But with age, you appreciate things more. And, and you know, there's like sometimes there's gateway drugs. Like I remember I had like Bread's Greatest Hits on cassette and no one like fucking set me on fire for owning it. I'm like, well, maybe it's okay if I say I like Hall & Oates. Maybe it's okay if I say I can jam out to Michael McDonald when I'm, just chilling out by myself. But, you know, lately I've been on a big Billy Ocean kick.
Okay.
It's been getting me going. Yeah.
That's where this kind of came from, I see.
The impetus of this question, sure.
Gotcha.
And I kind of had a sense you'd answer Michael McDonald because, you know, I'd lean that way too.
Yeah.
I mean,
you always did. You always did lean that way.
Yeah. You know, my new kicks and jams and everything going on with Mr. Bill A. Doesn't really change my love for Mr. Mac.
I think that Michael McDonald may be the gateway drug for Billy Ocean. Maybe that's what happened. Mm-hmm. I just need to graduate to Billy Ocean. Mm. Is that what I'm learning right now? Is that I need to kind of move on? It's time for me to move on to Billy Ocean.
Get your PhD in oceanography? You just it's like what you went 4 years at Mike McDonald U.
Yeah.
But now your aftergraduate program is with Billy Ocean. Right? Wow. Yeah. Wouldn't that be something? Imagine there's somebody out there who is legitimately an expert on both artists and kind of could probably school you and run a course, a class.
I bet they're out there, man.
Oh, yeah. Everybody's an expert on everything.
I bet there's a whole YouTube channel based just on that, you know, comparing those two.
And there's some guy making a stupid face for the thumbnail video.
Yeah.
Oh, Billy
like
Ocean.
Like a pondering face, a confused face.
Huh? Yeah, confused. Oh, I made a doo-doo in my pants. Click play. Hit the like button. Ring that bell.
Michael McDonald reaction video.
Oh, yeah. Michael McDonald reaction video. Yeah. Oh, I can't wait to fucking, waste my day watching that. Oh, yeah. Oh, no.
Or the people that make the videos where it's like, an Asian person listens to Phil Collins for the first time.
What? That's legit?
Well, I don't know about that specifically, but it's always something like that. Like, Irish people try American breakfast foods or, a Chinese person tries McDonald's or this person listens to this for the first time. It's a bunch of that shit.
Oh. Pacific and it garners Islander clicks. Transsexual diabetic listens to Weird Al.
Mm.
Right?
Dude, we could get some views.
There you go. You get your fucking... target audience. Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. I feel like I'm talking all over you. You're saying something, and here I am just like vomiting words all over your words.
See? I just did to you.
Ah, well, tit for tat.
We'll mix our vomit.
Yes. But, let's kind of get into life, living life, breathing air, oxygen, absorbing sunlight, photosynthesis. And all the other keystone blocks that make up, life on the planet Earth. And you've been enjoying all of these things.
Photosynthesis specifically.
Yes, in various locales. And we've been away because you've been away. This is all your fault. Mm. So for anybody out there who's like, hey, darn it, where has the selling out show been? Well, we have one culprit to blame. And his name is Nathan Gorzinski. So, Nate, please explain yourself and at least have some good reasoning as to why you've deprived all these fine folks the vibrations in their eardrums of your voice.
Okay, because there's certainly never been another episode without me where you were able to somehow make it work without me.
Whoa. Whoa now.
There's a little venom, sorry, in my voice there. But no, I totally am to blame for this because I took two trips in a row, kind of. I don't know. Does that
back
sound
to
like
back?
To sound like boasting? I don't.
You're
mean
loaded. You're rich. You're just fucking living the life of Riley.
I'm I'm very fortunate, I'll be honest. After a lifetime of taking the hard road through everything and like just having shitty luck, I all of a sudden am living a life where, yeah, I went to Colorado first. So I'll go just quickly go into that. I go every year. Our listeners may know this by now if they've been listening long enough. I try to take a trip to visit. I have a brother that lives in Colorado, and I'm fortunate enough to get to visit him once a year to ski. He lives on Vail, so it's like this world-class mountain. It's wonderful. And I usually go at the end of the ski season, like April specifically. And so I'm able to enjoy skiing, but still get the sun, and I can ski in a t-shirt usually, and it's super fun, and it's great to see my brother every year. So I went on my trip to go see him, but with the stipulation that this time I was going to try to learn snowboarding at 42 years old. I'm 43 now. My birthday just passed. That's a whole other thing. But at this advanced age, I'm trying to learn a skill that requires that you just fall going full speed down a mountain constantly. Like, there's no way to learn snowboarding without just knowing you're going to fall and probably injure yourself repeatedly. Like, the first couple days of learning snowboarding are literally just falling on your ass, hopefully not falling on your face too hard, but, you know, it's just... that's just kind of the reality of it. Sounds fun, I know. But I will say I was able to kind of break through that awkward beginning stage, and I did get to learn how to do it. I see why people go through the stress of falling and hurting yourselves repeatedly. Like, it is worth it once you learn how to do it. It's so much fun. And I've been a skier my whole life, and that's fun enough. And I used to always say, why would I learn to snowboard? My brother would always try to get me to learn to snowboard when I'm out there. And I'd say, I'm only out here for a couple weeks a year. Why would I spend some of that limited time just falling on my ass when I only have those few days to ski in Vail, like once a year? So I don't know. But this year I finally committed to doing it. And man, get this. The first day I went out to the mountain, we haven't even gotten on the gondola to go up the mountain yet. And I decided, well, I should probably like strap on the snowboard and see what it's like to kind of push yourself around on it and balance on this one board as opposed to two skis my whole life. Like, and before I even got on the gondola to go up the mountain, I slid down this mountain and fell into a mountain. I slid down this tiny little incline.
Oh, whoa.
And like nothing. It was nothing. It was basically, yeah, like a little bump. Like, I just wanted to see what it was like before I went on the top of the mountain. And I slid into this pile of skis, like where people had kind of stacked their skis, mm-hmm. and fell and landed, like put my hand out to catch me as I fell. And dude, I like sprained my thumb. And honest to God, that was the worst injury I had the whole time I was out there. It was basically like my thumb is still, I don't know if you can see, Dave, I'm still wearing a thumb brace. Yeah. That was
like a professional bowler.
Yeah, man. It's fashionable, but I will say that was the worst it got. I mean, I was falling and it hurt every time I was falling, sure. Learning, but it's even worse when, if you're falling, your instinct is to put your hands out and try to catch you, catch yourself. Once you hurt your thumb, it's like every time you put your hands out, it's re-injuring that injury. So it made learning and falling constantly that much worse until my brother basically tipped me off. Dude, when you fall, just keep your hands in fists. Like, so when you fall, you're landing on your fists. And I started doing that and it kind of made all the difference.
Well,
and I don't know.
Two things here.
Yeah.
One, when you, not to make light of your injury.
Oh, it's fine.
Okay. But when you first ran into other people's skis, it'd have been great if a bunch of bikers ran out of nowhere, came out of nowhere. Like in the movies when someone knocks over the row of motorcycles.
Yeah. Pee Wee Herman.
Yeah, there you go. Right, yeah. But instead, it's like a bunch of fucking, like, Hell's Angels or something, and they're like, hey, our skis!
It was just like that, except it was a bunch of rich, snobby douchebags.
That's what I'm saying would be even funnier, because you'd expect, like, the fucking turtleneck crowd. Oh my god, he knocked over my skis! But it'd even be even better if, like, dudes were, like, wearing, like, lambskin leather fucking vests.
Big beards.
That reminds me, sorry, I paused when I was saying that because it was an episode of Trapper John where there was like an anthrax outbreak and no one could figure out what the fuck was going on, but it was because these bikers were wearing lambskin vests.
Whoa.
Yeah, I know. So there's a throwback. And then two, how much did you have to fucking complain about your injury when you had your injury that your brother was just like, enough, dude, fucking ball up your hands, be a man, and go out there and learn how to do this shit.
Well, my brother is a saint, dude. Mm. My brother's the type of person who, he's always been super adventurous and does death-defying things and bungee jumps and snowboards and skydives and all that stuff. But he wants to share it with other people. He enjoys when he can teach someone else to do something and they start getting it. So he's actually kind of a born teacher. He's not a teacher by trade, but he probably should get into it because he is. He's super patient and he knows, like, when my brother takes me through, say, like some trees when I am skiing, like, he's not going to take me through something. He knows what my abilities are and he's not going to take me to something that's too much, like too death defying for my abilities. But at the same time, he's going to push me. So he was that way with the snowboarding, and I'm sure he got tired of hearing me fall and complain. And there was honestly one point, like day two, I think it was, where I just kept falling and I almost like couldn't get it. And I was just like, I don't understand this. It's so counterintuitive to skiing. Like you're standing a completely different way. The muscles you use are completely different and just all the physics are completely different than skiing. And I've skied for 35 years or whatever, so I'm trying to unlearn all this shit that I've learned. And I was almost at one point in tears as a 42-year-old man. I was like, I can't get this. I was just so frustrated with myself. Like, I was in pain, like all of it.
Sure.
And meanwhile, I'm watching like 3-year-old kids fly by me hitting jumps and shit. So that made it worse. I was like, I can't fucking get this.
Look at his balled up hands.
Yeah.
Why, mother?
Right?
Yeah.
But dude, I'll say this. My brother prepared for it. He's like, look, I wish I had this shit when I learned.
Yeah.
He had wrist guards, so I didn't break my wrists, because that's a real thing. When you put your hands out like that, it's real easy to snap your wrists. Like, and
My apologies.
Oh shit, my Siri's talking to me. Sorry,
oh,
everybody.
Oh my gosh, where'd she come from?
I don't know, I didn't even know she was here.
Hey now.
But yeah, he had these wrist guards that he let me wear. He had bought these pads that you like put on like shorts. They're like butt pads. So fall on your ass all the time, your tailbones, you know, it's covers your tailbone and everything. Knee pad things. Like I was suited up. I looked like some kind of athlete, I don't even know. I looked like a soldier.
You were, like a Terminator cosplayer or something.
Pretty much,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
But, not to go off on this forever, but I did learn and it was so much fun once I learned and I can't wait to do it again. But, it was something that I never thought I'd really learn. And I wish I had learned when I was in my 20s because it's a lot different falling and doing all these strenuous things in your 40s. The recovery time afterwards is just, you just don't bounce back like you used to. You know, my brother learned the shit in his 20s.
Yeah.
He was able to fall all day and then get up and go again the next day. Like me, I'd need a day to recover here and there while I was out there, but.
Yeah. And like you said, he's a good teacher. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's patient with you. He's like, listen, you got to snuggle with Rip Taylor before you fucking fuck Bruce Valanche. You know what I mean?
That's what they, as the saying goes.
That's what they, it's right on the fucking sign when you hit the slopes.
Right.
That's what they tell you to do. Your brother knows it. He probably has it fucking written down somewhere too.
He's got a tattoo.
Tattoo.
Yep.
Yeah, right where you can see it.
It's in reverse. He looks at it in the mirror, like Memento.
Yeah. There you go.
But
well, you know, I'm glad you came out the other side with only that weird, you know, thumb thingamajiggy you got going on.
Yep. It was pretty nice. Yeah. I was pretty fortunate, as I said.
And now, next year, you're ready to rock and roll. You're good to go. You're now, you know, hip with it and can show those three-year-olds how to shred.
Maybe. I mean, I'm sure I'll lose a little something in the next year just because I, you know, of inactivity. But yes, I have the physics down. I can kind of get back on the horse, so to speak.
Grab an ironing board. Just fucking go hit the backyard.
Yeah, man. But get this. So the as wonderful as these trips that I took were, after falling and banging myself up and my legs were tired from skiing and snowboarding for 2.5 weeks, then it was time to get on the plane to come back. And as soon as I got back to town, my girlfriend and I and her son were going on a trip to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. But we were driving, which, you know, we've done several times. We go to Myrtle Beach usually around once a year. The pandemic screwed things up, whatever. But the issue wasn't the long trip to Myrtle Beach. It was the long drive to Myrtle Beach after beating my body up for 2 weeks and then having to sit in a car.
Yeah,
so it was a little rough, but being down there was great. It was the first time we ever took our dogs. We have our Doberman and a pug, and it was they travel pretty well, man. Like our life is like taking these dogs to dog shows, and we drive to different states and do it, and so yeah, we travel with dogs all the time, which sounds like it could be a nightmare, but these dogs are both really good at traveling. They like being in their crates, so they're like real easy to travel with, and they got a lot of personality, and they're like a good conversation starter. You see people want to come up and, you know, they usually compliment our dogs because they're these, you know, they are beautiful purebred dogs.
You want to have conversation with strangers?
Well, you know.
I hate that. Ugh.
Trying to branch out a little, Dave.
Yeah, well, good luck with all that.
I don't know, but the point is, it was a great time. I'm super rested and feel great now. And then as soon as I got back, I had my birthday, my 43rd birthday. So now I'm officially 43. That's like, you know, we all wait for that age. That's the, you know.
Yeah, you can finally buy cigarettes and porn. Woohoo!
Yeah, man. You know, so.
No, you're officially creepy now when you when you do things that you probably would have been like, oh, when I'm 21, I can buy porn. When you buy porn at 43, everybody's like, look at that fucking weirdo. Go on the internet, Victor. What are you doing?
Yeah, I'm the only one still buying porn in the stores because everyone else knows.
Going down to the smoke shop, looking up there in the dusty rack. Yeah, I want that one in the bag. That poly bag fucking... I don't even know what magazines are even out anymore, but, you know, back in the day, it'd be like Blacktail.
Be like Swank.
Swank. Give me some Swank. Yeah. How much is that? $6.99? Worth every fucking red penny, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Happy birthday.
Thanks.
For what it's worth. I mean, I texted you. Yeah. That's what you get. Some people don't even get that from me.
Okay.
So...
We shouldn't expect more from people, man. Anything is a gift.
Everything is, in fact, a gift. And, you know, unlike the cramps in your legs, which occurred probably during your travels to Myrtle Beach.
Yeah, and in my back.
And your back, which I'm dreading because last episode, if anybody wants to hear about vacations and our plans and everything, we talked quite in depth. So go check out our archives on the Selling Out show page, and you can hear all of our episodes, but last one specifically about vacations.
Mm-hmm.
But I normally do my trip to Galveston, but this year I booked the motel room, not the hotel room, the motel room. And for like 3 nights, it was like $900.
Shit.
And I'm like, oh man, it's a week of my birthday in the middle of June. And I'm like, peak season, I guess, whatever. They get you, man. They get you.
Yeah.
So my wife, who is from Mexico, said, well, why don't we consider Mexico? Let's go. It's been a few years since we've been to Mexico. let's do that. And so we were looking up hotel rooms and some nice hotels. And it was like a whole week for like a few hundred bucks. So I'm like, cancel Galveston. Adios, motherfuckers. I'm going down to Mexico. But that being said, the first thing that came into my mind was, oh, the drive. Oh, my God. I'm going to be in agony driving to Mexico. Because where I live, it's going to be like a 11-hour drive with stops. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the moment you talk about, oh, yeah, I was sore from snowboarding and I had to hop in the fucking car. Yeah. Dude, you hit me like in my fucking
in
plumps.
The feels?
Yeah. Right there. You
dude, our trip was
double
like
tapped me right in the nuts.
16 hours, so I don't want to,
yeah.
You know, I'm not trying to one-up you, but fucking,
you did.
It sucks.
Too late. Yeah. You already one-up me. I've been upped.
Yep.
I've been let down. I've been up. So, yeah, you know, poof. But, you know, at least you had your dogs as companions, your freaking dogs. Let me kind of show how the sausage is made, okay. If you don't mind. You know, pull back the curtain to the great and wonderful Oz. Pre-show today, we're talking about your social media.
Mm.
Because I don't do the book. I don't do the Facebook. This is well talked about. I won't go too far into that anymore. But my wife was like, hey, look at this picture of Nate. And it's a picture of you and your dogs. And I go, wow. Like, whatever. It's Nate and his dogs. You know what I mean? And you told me that you actually get likes on this stuff. People sure. like it. And I was a little flabbergasted thinking, yeah, you know, whatever. Your cousin likes it. You know, your fucking whatever. Your coworker might like something. But, you know, people seem to like these dogs, man. And you were saying, and I'm leaking it now on the show so everybody can hear it, that you were saying you might even start a new platform.
Mm.
And I was wondering if you could elaborate a little bit to everybody here.
Well, I don't know how serious this is, but...
Okay, that's fine.
But I've contemplated starting a TikTok with my dogs because I do nothing but take pictures of my dogs, especially my... Instagram. My Facebook is one thing. I post a bunch of pictures, but my Instagram, if you go on it, I really have, I would say it's about 95% pictures of my dogs and I don't know if that's accurate, but it's a lot of pictures of dogs.
Sure.
And
yeah,
and I will get likes and everything, like large numbers of likes, but usually they are my friend groups, people I follow, whatever. But once in a while, especially if it's a little short video I take and put it on Instagram, I've got one of these videos of both my dogs playing in the snow. And I mean, it's not a ton of likes, but I've got a few dozen likes from people that I have no idea who they are. I don't know how this thing is getting promoted. I don't know how Instagram works.
You're not hashtagging? You're not like...
I haven't, no.
Wow, look at that.
Yeah, I don't know how it happened, but all of a sudden all these people are liking it. And so I thought people may appreciate a TikTok channel based on my dogs. I don't know. If I make one, I'll definitely let all our listeners know. So hopefully I get some views.
Yeah, why not? I mean,
go viral.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Do that. I heard that's the hip, cool, trendy thing to do because likes are currency.
Sure.
Who needs money when you got likes, right? When you got people fucking clicking something that you created. Or, like in my case, regurgitate. Mm. Because I recently created an Instagram just to show pictures of my comic books.
Nice.
And it's funny to me when people like stuff like this. Because it's not something I made. It's not something I'm contributing to mankind or society at large other than just showing, hey, I own this. Look at me. I bought this whenever. And then people click like. And I'm like, hey, look at that. They like the fact that I spent money on this thing. Wow. Yeah. But hey, that account is called Back Issue Buddha.
Buddha, like B-U-D-D-H-A? Buddha?
Yes. Like a little fat man Buddha. Yep. Because I'm a little fat man.
I honestly didn't even know you had done that. I'm like,
yeah, because I'm not a hype man. I don't fucking... go, you know, toot my own horn too often. So, yeah. So if you just want to see covers of comic books and stuff I buy, action figures and all comic book related stuff, there you go. One-stop shop. Make me an influencer. How about that?
That's cool. That's cool, man. I have an old friend that you know from back in the day when we were younger. We have this friend named Matt Marcel. I'll just put him out there. He used to hang out at the Espresso Bar, which is an old club that we used to play at and hang out at when we were younger, Dave. But this guy, Matt, now works on guitars, like upgrading people's guitars, putting new hardware on them, changing their pickups, tuning them up, doing all this stuff. And he does it for a little private business. And he'll just put up pictures of the guitars he's working on, like, regularly. They're not even his guitars. He's just like, look at this new Les Paul I'm working on, blah, blah, blah. And that's like, but dude, he gets tons of likes, and I love looking at that stuff. So comic books would be a similar thing, I imagine.
Yeah, it's like my brother, right? My brother's got this masshole chef thing going on Instagram where he does barbecue. And there's a whole community surrounding. I get it. Barbecue community, wonderful. Because you know what they're doing is they're making something.
Right.
They're like, hey, look at me cook this. Maybe I'll share how I made this or what I like to do or the rubs I use, marinades, whatever, right? So it's like a cooking club. I'm sure if anybody in the community heard me call it a cooking club, they probably want to knock all my teeth out. But, hey, you know, to the outside world, it's, you know, one of those things. And people, a lot of people like his stuff. And that's why I called it regurgitation earlier, okay? I'm probably not explaining myself very well, but when you create something or you're working on something or making something or anything, it's so different than I just took a picture of something. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, I definitely hear that. There's a whole other side of marketing now where it's like you don't even have to. We did an episode on this too called regurgitation, I believe.
We've done an episode on everything, haven't we?
I know. You could make a podcast just reacting to our podcasts. You could regurgitate our stuff and then do a reaction podcast to it, a reaction YouTube video. But that probably wouldn't be super
very popular.
But
yeah, probably not, because the Selling Out Show, because of my allergic reaction to social media at large, and I don't treat it with much reverence. I don't really respect it. So like there's a lot of shows out there who will really continuously hype their stuff. Me, I'm pretty much here it is. You know, I'm not fishing for likes. I'm not looking to really talk about it. Not to be rude or anything, but yeah, we made this for you. Enjoy it or not. That's your decision. This is life. But yeah, just another interesting side note, because I like looking at comic books, right? You like looking at the gearhead stuff with the guitars and, and everything, instruments. I was on Twitter and I saw this guy posting some cool comics, and he was actually not just doing covers. He was like kind of giving you some inside guts of the comics and what have you. And so I started following him. He followed me back and I was looking at his profile. I'm like, hey, this guy was the drummer for the band The Toadies.
Oh, no shit.
And I'm like, I liked the Toadies back then or back when.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's so weird that now I'm following the drummer of the Toadies. Unfortunately, I'm not much of a Toadies fan. I didn't know his name. I didn't realize what he did for a living until I followed him for purely for, you know, enjoying the comic book discourse.
It's interesting.
So, yeah, it's a small world, isn't it? So now I should probably go listen to some more Toadies music.
Well, I tell you, I saw the Toadies open for the Butthole Surfers, which you have a Butthole Surfers tattoo.
I do. Don't tell everybody. That's a secret, Nady.
Yeah, well, it's just an interesting coincidence. I saw the Toadies a few times, actually. Yeah, they were great back in there. I haven't heard them in a while. I only really know one or two albums, but they are good. If you go check out their album Rubberneck, everyone, check out the Toadies 1990s album Rubberneck. I'm not sure the exact year, but it's pretty good. I don't know why I'm plugging the Toadies right now.
I have no idea either. I will say this, though. While I'm still kind of staying on topic, which is rare, someone write this down on the calendar. I'm still talking about the same thing. Is that a lot of things in my life lately have been kind of bringing me down.
Okay.
Some decisions I've made.
Decisions.
I just automatically slowed down my mispronunciation of a word. But no matter what life's been throwing at me lately, I'm super stoked because I finally, after all these years, signed up for something I thought was exclusive and not for me, and that's comics via mail order.
Ooh.
So I've been going physically to a shop for decades.
Right.
To get my comics. I mean, back in like the early 00s, I had a subscription and I would get some comics in the mail, but still you'd go to the shop and interact with other human beings. Well, I'm done with that. Okay. Yeah. Now, 2 times a month, my comics, my monthly comics get shipped directly to my door at a discount. And I don't have to do anything. And I can just sit in my underwear, pick what comics I want, and there they are. Boom. It's
amazing.
And you have no idea how much joy this brings me. I am like inside right now percolating because I'm so happy. Like, and I've known about them for God knows how long. And I was always like, well, you know, people who do mail orders because they live in an area that's probably, you know, no comic book stores or no place to hang out. I mean, you know, poor them. So that's what they got to do. And, you know, a friend of mine is like, what are you doing paying retail for comics, man? I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, just go mail order it. And I gave him the same reason I just told you and whatever. And he's like, no. He's like, no. Anybody, no, just, he's like, I do it. And I save a ton of money by going 35% by doing it this way. And I was like, yeah, well, hey, who doesn't like to save a buck? But sure. Then even then I went with my comic shop, which is actually in my neck of the woods. It's like 40 minutes away from where I live.
Mm.
So very excited to get my first shipment in the next couple of days. So,
oh, that is exciting, man.
Oh, yeah. That's good mail.
I love it. I sometimes complain about how impersonal life has gotten and how we're able to do everything from home, which sounds amazing. That's great. It is great and it's convenient. Mm-hmm. But something about it just feels weird to me, like we're slowly isolating ourselves away from everyone. And, you know, I do our grocery shopping online. It'll get delivered to our house or sometimes I'll go pick it up, but they shop for me. And I order, yeah, whatever. When I order t-shirts from a store, like a band t-shirts and stuff, I get all excited, like you talk about, like, oh, they're coming, or they show up in the mail. It's like this exciting feeling. Yeah. I love it. But something about it, it's like, I miss going to a record store and flipping through the CDs or the vinyl, whatever. The comic book shop. I enjoy going and seeing, oh, look, they have this. And it's always exciting when they have something that you didn't know they were going to have. You know, you're surprised by something or you see a new title. But you know what? When you're online ordering stuff, you could get anything. It doesn't, you know, it's
yeah,
not
well,
even.
There's yeah. a thing, right? It's like I don't do eBay or anything for back issue comics, right?
Okay.
I keep referencing this friend of mine. I don't know if he should remain nameless. Should I keep his name nameless?
Yeah. Huh?
Chuck Woolery. So Chuck yeah. Anyway, Chuck would be like, dude, you gotta hunt in the wild for these back issues. What are you doing? It's more fun to find them in the wild. And he was absolutely right. And I switched my gears. I'm like, hey, I don't need to go online for back issues anymore. Fuck that shit. And so now here's the thing, right? With my subscription to the mail order comics for the new comics, they have so many back issues on their website and they piggyback whatever you buy with your shipment. So you don't have to pay extra shipping.
Oh, that's cool.
And so I was like, oh, okay, great. And I went a little bit overboard. One of my credit cards literally jumped out of my wallet, started weeping before it, took its final dive into the garbage disposal. Because like, dude, slow down, man. Not only are you breaking your whole, like, you know, code of ethics here when it comes to back issue comics, but, you know, you spend a lot of money and the whole point is saving money. What are you doing? But anyway, yeah. That being that, I'm still going to be able to go to Half Price Books and hunt for things in the wild and have fun with it. But at the same time, I don't have to go to a comic book store for new books. I don't have to pay retail anymore or straight up retail because it's still, you know, whatever. And the whole system I've devised in my brain to me as a collector, as this 44-year-old collector, because we just keep wanting to say our ages on the air to you know, prove how crusty and old we are.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is fucking nirvana, man. This is peak being me.
Yeah.
I love this. I can't get over this. So no matter what's been thrown my way, how depressed I get, I go, well, I'm still going to get my motherfucking comics in the mail. And Sunday, I'm going to Half Price Books. Yeah.
Excellent.
Feels good.
Yeah.
Can't complain. Feels real good.
Whatever it takes for you to feel happy, Dave, as long as it's not hurting anyone else. You know, that's just, that's the whole thing. It's just, what else are we living for? We're living to be happy, man. And as long as you're not homeless and your family's fed and,
well,
you know.
Keep buying those fucking back issues online, getting tricked by the piggyback.
Yeah,
that's how they get you, baby. They're like, well, shipping's free if you buy with me. Oh, well, all right. Look at the selection they have. They have everything I want. And the prices are fairly reasonable.
It would be irresponsible for me not to order something on top of it because I'm saving on shipping.
That's what I say to my wife. I'm like, well, what, you know, come on now. What do you think's going to happen here? I mean, if I don't do it, someone else is going to do it. I'm going to feel like a fool. It's called FOMO. That's another thing someone brought into my vernacular a little while ago that I wasn't hip or with or down or knowing of is the whole FOMO. I'm like, what's FOMO? They're like, fear of missing out, man.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, that's something. That's something I've had for years. I didn't know what they called it. I just thought it was anxiety. Hello.
It's a form of anxiety, that's for sure.
It is a form. And, you know, talking about forms, let's switch gears a little bit because forms are a matter of shapes. Things take different looks. Things appear different in many ways, but they are intrinsically the same. Am I wrong?
No, except it's intrinsically.
Intrinsically. What did I say? Intristic?
I don't know. Doesn't matter. I'm just a grammar Nazi.
I know, and I can't live without you. I need you because I'm just like, imagine me like doing something official other than a podcast. How what kind of fool would I be without you? I'd need you, like, if I was at a podium, standing next to me to, like, hey, no, you said that wrong, man.
Just elbow you. And
yeah, something. Be like, dude, dumbass, hello. Because I'm sure there's other grammar Nazis out there listening to our show right now. We're like, Nate, please correct him.
It's possible.
But here I am stumbling and fumbling and all over this whole segue because I wanted to talk about something you wanted to talk about. I wanted to bring up movies.
Okay.
Movies, yes, film, you know, celluloid. And what I was trying to allude to earlier was you had a thing about genres. Did you not?
Yeah. I mean, nothing huge. I was just noticing that there's a new movie out. It's called, I believe, Everything, Everywhere, All at Once, or something like that. It's one of those long titles. Everything, right. All at Once, or Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. And it's basically a movie about the way it was advertised caught my eye. It says, the greatest multiverse film you'll ever see, or something, something to that effect.
Okay.
And it got me thinking about, there are these movies that when we were younger, they were groundbreaking. They were their own thing. And when you said, like, oh, have you seen Groundhog Day? Or you talked about something, you said, it was kind of like, I felt like I was in Groundhog Day. Like, you knew what somebody was talking about. The movie Groundhog Day is a guy keeps waking up and it's the same day over and over again. And he's got to keep reliving it. And we all know that now. It's become part of our vernacular as a society. And the same thing, I noticed that with the greatest multiverse movie ever. You know, there's other movies. I remember the Jet Li movie called The One way back in the day, where it was like there were a bunch of versions of this one guy throughout the various multiverses that, you know, and he had to defeat other versions of himself. And it's, again, it's kind of a trope, but our versions of our genres are becoming so specific now. It's not a weird science fiction movie or a weird comedy. It's another great example is, yeah, that the Groundhog Day thing. Recently there was a movie called Palm Springs with Andy Samberg, where it was the same sort of thing. He found this way to keep reliving the same day, and he was caught in like a time loop, and he had to keep doing, and he was like playing around with it and having fun with it, kind of like Bill Murray in Groundhog Day. And there was the Tom Cruise movie called Edge of Tomorrow, which was tentatively titled Live, Die, Repeat. And it was the same thing. He kept dying and he'd wake up at the beginning of that day again and he'd die and he'd wake up again and he had to keep reliving the same thing. And it's become a genre. Or this another one was Jacob's Ladder. We've probably talked about Jacob's Ladder on this
show.
Oh,
yeah. Too. Oh, yeah. We're just hitting all the – we're going through all the hits right now. Yeah.
But Jacob's Ladder – I don't want to spoil it for everyone. Block your ears for the next 10 seconds. But at the end of Jacob's Ladder, after this whole weird psychedelic movie, it turns out it was all happening as he was dying. The movie ends and he's dead. And it's just kind of like this whole weird trip that he's going through as he's dying. And then there was The Sixth Sense, like a decade after that, which was all about, you know, the whole movie takes place. And at the end, it turns out, no, he's dead. And the whole thing that you watch, it makes you like kind of second guess everything you just saw. And I was watching a review on Jacob's Letters, kind of like we were talking about before, like young people watching movies for the first time from back in the day. And it was like a young person watches Jacob's Ladder for the first time. And they were talking about how, yeah, you know, it's kind of an overplayed thing nowadays with the whole movie turning out to be just somebody's dying and it, like talking about it like it's this old subject that's been done to death. And I mean, I didn't really realize that, but it's true. I mean, nowadays you can, and it basically will spoil the whole movie, but you can narrow down a movie's genre to like things that specific. Oh. There's just that many movies out there.
Time loop trope.
Yeah.
Wait for the point where he leaves a toaster in the bathtub.
Yeah, man.
To you end know. His day so he can wake up tomorrow and do it all over again.
And run around with a groundhog in a truck.
Imagine that was his what he wanted to do every day. It's like, oh, it was your perfect day. Oh, I'm just driving around with a groundhog in my truck. That's what I'm doing.
I'm going to make a TikTok channel.
Make my groundhog famous. That's what I'm going to get viral every day. That's what's going to happen here.
Yeah, man.
Maybe we can blame Spider-Man, the last Spider-Man movie, or Marvel, which is just fucking genius. How they, you know, or Into the Spider-Verse, the animated film, where it's just like, okay, we have superheroes, right? Well, geez, we've been doing this now. It's been really popular for quite a while. We don't want to get too tired and wear people down. So we killed off this guy. We did this already. What can we do that's going to really fucking stir the pot? All right. Multiverse, which has existed in comics for so fucking long. Like there's different versions of the same character all over the place. But now they can say, all right, well, we killed Tony Stark. But now we can get someone completely different to play Tony Stark. Should we, you know, see fit and to say he's the Tony Stark of this universe instead. And okay, well, Spider-Man is kind of getting boring. Well, let's mix Spider-Man and the Hulk. Okay, no problem. This is going to be the Spider-Hulk from universe 2822, whatever, you know, and we can make it say it's canon. It's in continuity. Let's fucking do this, man. I think that's fucking genius because it's just printing money.
Yep.
As if they weren't already. But, shame on you, Nate. Shame for falling for whatever advertisement or whatever link they had to say, hey, watch this guy watch Jacob's Ladder for the first time. Why would you do that? Well, first of all, why? You know better.
Because I love Jacob's Ladder.
I understand that, but still, like, do you really care what this guy's opinion is? Would it change your life? Would it enrich it? Or, you know, make you angry. Well, maybe make you angry. That's a stupid one. But I mean, would it make you feel better in any shape or form knowing what this guy feels about the flick?
No, but it probably brings me about as much joy as it would bring someone joy to watch my pug and my Doberman run around on a TikTok video.
Okay. Well, this is all still, you know, foreign stuff for me.
Yeah.
Because neither of those examples would do anything for me.
Right.
But yeah,
you'll
okay.
find yours.
I will. Well, I think I might have alluded to it earlier when I was talking about fucking, you know, snuggling with Rip Taylor and banging fucking Bruce Valanche.
Oh man,
I think that's what I need in my life. I brought that up on a lark earlier and just let it go, and I'm not going to let that die.
Okay.
So I might even bring it up later in the show. Who knows? This might be one of those, like, if you hear Dave talking about spooning with Rip Taylor and anally banging Bruce Valanche, be caller 16 to win a trip to Six Flags this summer. Oh, good, you laughed. That was some fucking silence there. I was like, what?
I was trying not to vomit my laughter over your speech.
Oh, okay. Thank you. I was like, oh, that was not good. But, yeah, good. So.
I was jerking off.
Oh, good. That's even better to know. Oh, yeah. So, you know, the whole, like, genre thing, how, like, these little small little niche. I say that right, Nate? Niche.
Niche. Niche works.
Niche. Niche.
Niche. Niche. Both are correct, actually.
But... Oh, wow. Good. Go ahead. Any door I choose. This is a great Choose Your Adventure book right here. Page 47, I live. Page 40, or would it be like page 62, I live. But, yeah, I mean, it's almost like labels. We've talked about this probably ad nauseum, but like everybody's going to label everything.
Yep.
Everything has to be like fucking dissected and then put into its own little fucking box over and over and over again until we're just down to like fucking cells of something. Yeah. You know what I mean? So.
Well, every one of our episodes, we've done so many now, we can narrow them down to this is an episode about movie tropes.
Yeah.
This is an episode about this and put them in categories.
Are you trying to say we come with nothing new? Everything we do has been done before.
Eh, partially.
Yes, maybe. Mostly. Yeah, well, whatever.
Whatever, that's what? Life.
Them suckers still listening. Gotcha. Right. Gotcha. I didn't even need to put a fucking goofy face on a thumbnail. No. Didn't have to do that. Not at all.
You could replace me and say, this is Nate from an alternate universe.
I'm going to do that. I want to replace you with a beautiful young woman, voluptuous young lady. My voice inside my brain is like, Dave, stop now before you continue talking. Like, don't say anything further or you're going to be just as creepy as a 43-year-old Nate in the smoke shop buying his issue of Plumper mag. It's Plumper in print. I don't look at my Plumper on the internet.
I watch Plump Dumper.
I need Plump Dumper and glossy stock. That's what I need. Mm. Yeah, under the bed it goes. But you live alone. Under the bed it goes.
It still belongs down there.
That's where it belongs. Okay? So, yeah. Anything else you want to say about the movies there? I was going to say, is there like a genre that we're missing that you would like to see?
No, I don't want to see anything, Dave. I'm done watching shit.
Yeah.
It's all been done.
Yeah. Yeah.
No.
I will say this. On my vacation to Mexico, one of the intended fun things to do with the fam is we're going to see Jurassic World Dominion in the movie theater. But those sons of bitches have probably spoiled 75% of the movie with the trailers already.
I'm sure.
Yeah. I can't even watch them. Like, my kid's like, oh, did you see the new trailer? I'm like, they just released a trailer 2 days ago. There's another one? Stop.
Yeah.
Stop it. Leave me alone. I'm going to pay to see your fucking movie. It's like, why does Coke even advertise? What's the point? We're all drinking Coke. Like, shut the fuck up, man. We get it. Yeah. Coke is soda. It's the number one soda. You're throwing money away.
And Jurassic Park doesn't even need to advertise. All
Jurassic
you have to
World.
Do. Well, whatever, Jurassic World, because it's, and this one, it meets up with Jurassic Park.
Oh,
so
true.
It's both. Yeah. So, but all you have to do is say, new Jurassic Park, and it's free advertising, because everyone knows what that is. You don't have to get someone interested in new characters or a new storyline, because you know what it is. It's automatic free advertising just using an old title, an old franchise.
They could just fucking put out a 10-second spot. A black screen.
Yeah.
It says Jurassic World Dominion, June 10th. Mm-hmm. And people are automatically going to see the movie. Boom.
It's true.
Probably cost you fucking $8 to make. Put it on TV. What is it going to cost you? Like $100,000? Okay, you're done. That's a lot of money. Yeah. That's a lot of fucking money. Yeah. And there you go. You advertise. Everybody, now the fucking let the internet get its herpes. Its scorching case of, spoiling everything, a desire to be first, and everybody's going to know about the movie. But no, here we are Yep, gotta fucking be the biggest brand in the world. Keep putting out commercials that suck. None of the commercials are good. None of them are funny anymore. It's just as if they were any really funny to begin with. But I'm going to get on a tangent about advertising. I'm going to save that for another show. That's what I'm going to do. And then on that show, I'm going to refer to this show and say, remember that time I was about to go off on advertising? Check it out in our archives. Well, here's the fucking big reveal. Here it is.
That's some meta shit.
I am meta. I am meta all over the place. Yeah. I am meta as hell. And I'm not going to take it anymore. But in the spirit of advertising, let me do a live read here for the partners of our humble little program who supply Sounds us with great. Goods and are nice to us, because I like it when people are nice to me, Nate. Mm. I like friendly people.
Who doesn't? They're all love it when people are nice to you.
They're neighborly, which is, again, a fucking what kind of term is neighborly? Like, who talks to their neighbors anymore? Who does that? Does it people show up at your door? Hey, I made some cobbler. No. Be like, I ain't gonna fucking eat that. Get the fuck out of here. Yeah, no one likes their fucking neighbors. So how about this? They're not like our neighbors. They're like the good friends that we never met in real life, that we enjoy talking to, yet have no desire to even in fact meet in real life. Mm. That's more relatable, I think, in 2022. But anyway, first up we have Northland Vapor. .com. I am currently enjoying the vape flavor called Blue Raz, which I exclusively use. I love it so much. It tastes so good. And it is Diketone and artificial sweetener free. Maybe you don't know what a Diketone is. Maybe you're in love with artificial sweeteners. Well, in either case, what the fuck, man? Come on. You don't need them. And your juice tastes so much better without them. Enjoy a smoother, cleaner tasting vape with their e-liquids at northlandvapor.com. We also have alpinehemp.com, CBD, 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 CBD. I'm going to get all jazzy with that and start scatting.
CBD,
CBD, CBD, CBD, CBD, CBD, CBD, CBD, CBD. If you want to buy me CBD, just go ahead now. So, visit alpinehemp.com. They got everything CBD under the scorching sky. That is if you are sensitive to heat and sunburns, or just basically everything you can think of. They balms. You might need some balm.
Who doesn't?
After you get a sunburn, some CBD balm. We got pet products, Nate. Pet products for the doggies. Yep. Because once your dogs become internet superstars, they're going to be super stressed out. And be like, the pressure to perform.
They need it for a long car ride in a crate.
Yeah.
Eat some CBD.
Daddy wants to put me on TikTok again. Without my consent, I didn't sign shit because I don't have opposable thumbs.
Damn, dude, you trying to get me sued?
Yes, I am. And if you are being sued and you're stressed out, or maybe you have some other medical ailment, whatever the case may be, remember Alpine Hemp. Now, at both those sites, northlandvapor.com and alpinehemp.com, you can save 19% off your entire order by using code SELLINGOUT19. Also, under their banner is wonkyweeds.com and deathbygummybears.com, which are in the Delta business, the Delta 8, the Delta. There's a new one. They're like a Delta 10.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, so the Delta is going beta, baby. Or is it the other way around? Is it beta, Delta? I was never in a fraternity. Maybe you can help me out. No?
Delta, Delta, Delta. Can I help you, help you, help you?
Yeah. Lambda, Lambda, Lambda.
Yeah.
Throw that fucking javelin.
It's Greek.
It is Greek. Yes, indeed. So definitely check out all those websites. And if your javelin needs to go a little smoother into a landing, make sure you check out spunklube.com. Spunk Lube. Love it. Use it. Can't get enough of it. Because if you're an ugly, fat piece of crap like me, and trust you me, I am that. I just kind of stumbled myself there, thinking I just said me too many times in like two consecutive sentences. Did I, Nate? Was that bad?
I don't think. I think you're overthinking. I think you had too much Delta 8.
Oh, yeah, that could be it. I'm trying to be self-deprecating, talking about lube. Because, you know, it's all, this is really what advertising's all about. I'm full of crap because I'm so handsome, so gorgeous, I crack mirrors in every room I walk into. No, but seriously, though, lube helps. Come on, let's be honest. And, you know, this is the lube used by professionals in the adult film industry, but why let them have all the fun when you can have it shipped directly to your doorstep today? And you can do that by visiting spunklube.com. Try it soon. I was going to say today again. See, I used today. I was going to do today again. Pet peeves, which is another topic we had an episode about, and you can thank me later. So anyway, that was probably the worst live read in radio or podcast history, so I will gladly accept that award. And while I'm off polishing that, we will enjoy something that we like to call Nate's Notes.
Dust off your LPs. It's time for Nate's Notes.
His music was much better before he got sober. We've all heard this sentiment in regards to someone at some point, I'm sure. I know I've said it about several artists. Nine Inch Nails, for example. Sure, Trent Reznor has seen greater success than ever over the past decade, winning Academy Awards and earning Hollywood paychecks for his soundtrack work on huge films like The Social Network and Disney's animated feature Soul. And of course, he's put out album after album as Nine Inch Nails pretty steadily since he started the project in the late 80s. He got sober in 2001, and as far as output, he's certainly been more productive since then. But personally, I haven't been moved by much of it since the 90s. It's still well-produced, catchy, electronic rock music. The guy is a talented musician and songwriter. But something about those first albums just hits differently. There's a desperation and a passion that just seems more pronounced in the early work. I'm sure some of it is just the fact that any band gets a little stale eventually. Again, Trent has written some cool stuff since the turn of the millennium, but the Nine Inch Nails sound is far from novel after 30-plus years of existence. It's no longer this exciting new thing. And of course, there's the age-old problem of trying to continuously make new combinations of the same 12 notes, which is a challenge every musician faces. I'm not trying to pick on Nine Inch Nails specifically. He's just an easy example of what I'm trying to discuss. And honestly, I've noticed that the problem isn't even necessarily in an artist getting sober. Another factor that I haven't mentioned yet is an artist just growing older. And in a sense, I guess this is tied into the sobriety thing. In active addiction, a person stops developing emotionally at the age they start their drug habit. If you started using as a teenager and got sober later in life, then chances are you missed out on a lot of the normal emotional processing people go through. You probably numbed your way through it. So an addict tends to react in a less mature way than other people their own age. But sometimes that emotional immaturity is what makes a good song. Some of the greatest cliches in love songs are lines like, I'd die for you, I'm nothing without you, you complete me. Some of my favorite goth-type singers, Reznor included, wrote whole albums fueled by the resentment of being a spurned lover. I used to love that shit, wallowing in poetic misery. To bring it back to addiction, Alice in Chains wrote arguably their best work, Dirt, to be a concept album based completely on their singer's struggles with heroin. You can hear the desperation, the self-loathing. It's captivating and powerful. Ultimately, that singer died alone after isolating from the rest of the band, so that's shitty. But the feelings captured on that record were obviously genuine. It's great art, but was it worth it? Some people try to capitalize too much off painful emotions, and it ends up being transparent and cartoonish. Korn's first album was groundbreaking in that they wrote unflinchingly about childhood trauma they had endured. But 3 or 4 records in, they were still complaining about how their parents raised them. I don't know what's worse, not being able to process that stuff after multiple albums, or faking it in order to sell records. I don't wish for anyone to suffer, but I don't want to listen to someone pretending to suffer either. There are definitely subjects to write about as an older, wiser person. Age brings a different perspective, and different things become important. We may not obsess over crushes anymore, but there's plenty to process as mortality becomes more and more of an imminent presence. And of course, there are other things to write about, but I'm just approaching this as a former goth kid that wore a lot of black. I personally am glad I've gotten to a more stable place in my life. I have my health. I'm off the dope. I'm in a stable relationship. Life has kind of ground down the sharp claws of some of those inner demons. I'm not like a robot now, but I can't imagine feeling the way I did when I wrote some of my old songs or poems. To be clear, that's a good thing. But when I sit down to put lyrics to something I'm writing on the guitar, sometimes I wish I didn't feel so silly trying to pour my heart out. Music, in a way, is like sex. The crazier the person, the better and more passionate it can be. But that doesn't mean you want to spend a lot of time with that person otherwise. And in both cases, drugs seem to make it better. But eventually you just get more interested in the drugs, so the sex and the music fall by the wayside. Trent Reznor is in a pretty good place in his life, I'm sure. He's married and even makes music with his wife. They got a few kids. Trent is scoring films and occasionally plays big arena tours. He's achieved legendary status. I'm sure the last thing he's worried about is whether he can still find inspiration to write a convincing song about love and heartache. The dude still seems to enjoy making tunes and working with new technology. I suppose that's all that matters. I, too, still get excited about jamming with friends, about getting a new instrument, about playing a decent gig. I guess I'll just leave the heart-on-sleeve lyric writing to the youngsters. Write what you can now, kids. In another few years, it will all seem like silly bullshit.
My balls shrivel in the hot tub. They gon' shrivel in the hot tub, yeah. That's what you can write about now, Nate.
See?
Your balls shriveling in the hot tub. Not about love anymore. Doesn't need to be about love anymore. No, 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 no. Just about what you know. Write what you know. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's true. But my problem is, as someone who always drifted towards that side of the musical spectrum, like the darker, sadder stuff, it's like, yes. I just feel silly trying to write it now. Like, I don't know. I was trying to write something. I wrote this cool guitar line the other day, and I'm trying to write something, and I literally, it was like writer's block, but it was like emotional writer's block. Like, like a writer's block for a musician or lyrics is like, it's different than having to come up with like a plot line to a book or something. It's like, I literally can't pull emotions out of me in a way that, I don't know, sounds poetic or, you know, it's hard to get psyched up about something like that. Irresponsibility of being young or being on drugs is kind of good for music. But like I said, the problem is that once you start doing the drugs, they take over and you stop
care
wanting
about
to
the drugs.
Music at all.
Yeah, for sure.
So I don't know. It's a weird place to be in. I guess it's not a bad problem because I'm happy. I, you know, my life is good, and I just focus more on the music writing as far as like the instruments, like playing. I just leave the lyric writing to the tortured souls.
Well, okay. Do you write down lyrics when you try to like formulate them, or do you just sing them and whatever sticks you kind of memorize? Or
I do a little of both. Like I'll kind of just spout out shit just to get a melody of vocals down. Mm-hmm. Like I'll play the guitar line, and sometimes a word will just kind of pop out, or you know, and I'll use that to kind of branch out from, you know, whatever the word might be.
Well, know. let me give you a very frustrating scenario.
Okay.
You're in line at the Dollar Tree.
Okay.
Okay. And you notice the line is not moving, so you decide to hop in the next line. Now, okay. While you're in that new line, you look over at the person who's standing in the spot that you were just in, the one that you abandoned.
Yeah.
And so you watch them to see how they're moving the pace. And then when you see them check out before you do, it hurts.
Man.
It hurts deep.
Yeah.
Like inside, you're like, oh, fuck me.
I feel it.
Right, right. So why can't you just kind of like write that down? You know, okay. Waiting in the wrong line. She's ahead of me. I made the wrong choice, baby. Oh, can't you see? And then you just change the words around, right? Yeah. So instead of saying line, use the word love. I'm in the wrong love, baby. Yeah. You know what I'm saying here? You know where I'm trying to go?
I do.
You're picking up what I'm putting down?
I do.
Maybe you can try that instead. And then before you know it, you got a fucking, you know, something big going on there.
I hear you, but my problem is... You're right. I'm tormented by different things. I think it's the falseness of... Well, I guess the pain would be real in that case. If I wrote the song, the pain is still there. Mm. I'm just changing a few words around, so... So it wouldn't necessarily be false. It wouldn't be like, you know, like I said.
No, but you're yeah. I think what you're going to say now is like, it's a different kind of pain. It's like stubbing your toe or getting your arm amputated.
Sure.
Right? Sure. There's different things going on. Well, obviously different things. But, you know, they both hurt, but one hurts significantly more and is much harder to describe or paint a picture of lyrically than the other. So, and I completely... Trust you, me. I feel you with every fiber of my being about the whole, like, I am on drugs. Like, we did mention the drugs ultimately win, right? No matter what.
Yeah.
No matter what, they will always win. It's like going to a casino. House always wins.
Yeah.
But at that time, they are fuel, man. Yep. Like, they are creative fucking fuel. When you are sitting down writing something, jamming with somebody, and you're all high as kites, there is, like... That's a feeling, you know what I mean? Yeah. That you could bottle and sell and make millions of fucking dollars because there's nothing else like it. Nothing.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. So to try to, okay, one, replicate that because you're not on drugs anymore. And two, like you're in a completely different point in your life, as you had alluded to with Trent Reznor.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, his trajectory as an artist and everything like that. That's, I don't know, man. It's tough to... even bother to try, maybe, and say, you know what I'm saying? Like, maybe just start, or you just said, I'm leaving the lyrics to somebody else. I'm just going to do the music because that's something that's still coming to me naturally and everything else like that. Or maybe, just changing gears, man.
Well, Trent Reznor does his soundtracks now, so you're right. You know, it's like he's shifted gears into writing instrumental stuff. So I don't have to listen to him faking about being depressed about a relationship when I know he's actually married and fine.
Well, maybe he's writing about the past.
Maybe. Or I mean, that's possible.
Get ready for a fucking prenup.
Ooh.
Prenup is going to pay out. But,
Well, what about Robert Smith? We were both huge Cure fans growing up. Robert Smith wrote all these like super sad songs. Like The Cure is a perfect example of what a person that wore a lot of black would listen to.
Yeah.
It's all heartbreak and all this stuff. He was happily married the whole time he wrote all that shit. Robert Smith was married at a young age. His whole career, he was writing all these heartbreak songs while being happily married. Like,
well,
I wonder, A, how his wife felt about all that, and B, if he was just making shit up and able to just fake that shit or what?
Just maybe he was doing what I had mentioned, where his like whole thing was like, oh no, I ran out of conditioner, you know, because he had a lot of hair.
Yeah.
And so he's all fucking bummed out about that because he's like, I can't have fucking split ends. This shit can't be frizzy. I have a reputation.
Out of Aquanet.
Yeah, I'm out of hairspray.
Yeah.
But let me change hairspray to out of, like, love. I don't know, something, you know?
Yeah. Dude, sometimes I wonder, sometimes I wonder what happened to, like, the person that Trent Reznor wrote Something I Can Never Have about, or what happened to the person he wrote the song Reptile, where he's like she spreads herself wide open to let the insects in, and you know, like, oh, my beautiful liar, oh, my precious whore. Like, he's writing these venomous songs about some girl. And it's like, she probably, you know, works at fucking Kohl's now or something.
Yeah, she's down at the fucking the VFW. Pounding bruise, swollen knuckles with, like, fucking rings on every finger.
Maybe.
You know who I'm talking about.
Oh, I know her.
Yeah, you know who I'm talking about. Like, you look at that woman who's, like, 56 years old now, and she's been fucking, like, beaten down by fucking the sun, leathery skin. You know, like I was just mentioning the hands, because, you know, hands are a big deal to me or whatever. But she's seen better days. There's your reptile right there.
Right, man.
She wants some Eddie Money on the jukebox, and she ain't fucking going home without a date.
Yeah.
That's right. Trent Reznor's muse.
Yeah, or she's like, I used to be with Trent Reznor.
Yeah, sure, whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever you say. What do you say you take those dentures out? Let me go hit the John. What do you say? But yeah, she could be working at Kohl's folding T-shirts. She could be a soccer mom. She could be a fucking U.S. senator. We don't fucking know.
No idea. It's she just could interesting.
Be putting lotion on her skin in a well. Trent's got something going on there. We don't know. We just don't know. Yeah. Your guess is as good as mine, and I just made a few of them.
Yeah, there's a few guesses. Yeah. One of them's got to be right.
Well, no.
But not necessarily.
They were guesses. This is something that is absolutely true. Yeah. Well,
dude,
I
was just going to say, I sometimes wonder if I'm on, like, I'm on medications now for certain things where I'm like, my issues now are like, I have social anxiety. I have a lot of social anxiety, like which is an issue. Don't get me wrong. It sucks, but it's not the kind of crazy that helps you write good music, really. It's just kind of like just being feeling anxious whenever I have to go do anything, like go out in public. But I'm on certain medications, which do help somewhat. But I wonder if the numbing of those medications is like affecting this, like where maybe I don't know, maybe I could write something if I felt, because I feel like sometimes I don't feel much at all, and maybe it is the medications, but I don't know. Who knows? Just a weird thing I was thinking of. I'm just like, I don't know if I'm just too old to have the passion.
Yeah, I think I laid out a couple of those scenarios for you, and you seem to relate pretty darn quick to them. So,
yeah.
It might be the latter there, guy. I mean,
maybe.
You know, medication, sure, it will dull you. I know that for a fact. I mean, I take some pain medication. Sometimes I'm just like, duh.
Yeah.
Not even duh, just duh. So I don't even get my full out of the whole thing. So who knows? And you didn't really interrupt me. What I was going to do was a cheap plug for contacting us. Because I was going to say, hey, anybody else out there feel like Nate? If so, check us out. No, check us out. Come visit us. No, don't come visit us. Write us. That's apt. Write us, sellingoutshow@gmail.com, or hit up the socials at sellingoutshow. That's what I was going to do.
Sounds good.
Yeah, it didn't sound half bad. A lot better than my live read. Second guessing all over the place there.
You're fine.
It's authentic. That's what it is, Nate.
That's right.
Authenticity is my middle name.
If not genuine.
Yeah. Genuinely dumb. But I fucked Trent Reznor back in 1984. He wrote a song about me, Head Like a Hole.
He said, I leave a trail of honey to show you where I've been, and I got insects in my coochie.
Yeah, that's right, you do. You got locusts up there in your Fort Leavenworth, don't you? All locked up in there. Lost the key. Yeah. Why does everybody have to have a Southern accent? Especially when they're dumb.
You live down there.
I know. It's just something I do. I'm such a bigot.
Yeah.
That's what I am. So, yeah. You know, well, you know what, though? We got to end the show in a few minutes because I have a recital to go to. I'm bringing some cookies to the recital. We've had a very fun show. We talked about some fun stuff. We goofed off like nobody's business. I mean, we are truly, you know what? We may have lost the ability to write some deep and profound lyrics, but we can still fucking, you know, just throw fucking caution to the wind like nobody else. I mean, we are a dynamic duo.
Yeah.
In dorkery.
Yeah. We just got to change our approach to creating content. Well, I just mean go from depressed, sad, and, you know, stressed out, sad, emotional relationship music to silly, wacky, improv Bruce Valanche fucking Rip Taylor.
You did that for me. Yeah. Be caller number 16 right now. And then if someone does call, I'd be like, well, I didn't say it. Nate said it. Sorry.
Doesn't count.
No roller coaster for you, Rodney. No way. Well, I will end the show, I guess, by saying I watched the finale of Moon Knight this morning.
Oh, don't tell me about it.
On Disney Plus. And spoiler alert.
No.
Everybody dies.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Okay. Rip Taylor ends Moon Knight like he did all the Jackass movies.
Yeah. A little confetti.
Yep.
There you go. Mom's spaghetti. I'm nervous. So without further ado, I guess, the end of the show. Oh. Yeah, there we go. So for those who have stuck around the entire time to listen to us talk about everything you can think of, I guess, thank you. I appreciate you. I love you. No matter where you're from, what you do, how you dress, how you love, or what you care about, I thank you. Virtual hugs for each and every one of you. I am Dave. That is Nate. And this has been The Selling Out Show.
Peace. Wake up, you never look so low. Tell me how we know they can hear us coming. It's easy for me, I got a head start running away. Keep up, but you're just these men quick. So how did you learn to be sick so cunning?